I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. The Philadelphia Inquirer Daily News 2018 investigation into the environmental hazards in Philadelphia's public schools won the Gannett Award for Innovation in Watchdog Journalism, the Frank A. Blethyn Award for Local Accountability Reporting, a Keystone Press Award, and was a finalist for a Pulitzer Prize. It documented the alarming amount of toxins in schools, including lead in paint and water, asbestos, mold, and silica, making children sick. One little boy was hospitalized because of lead poisoning. Another little boy suffered carbon monoxide poisoning. Our guests Barbara Laker and Wendy Ruderman of the authors of Toxic City Six Schools, along with Dylan Purcell, and it's part of a series of in-depth reports about the impact of dangerous chemicals on Philadelphia's children, in the paint in their homes and in the soil found in backyards and outside play areas. Their series have led to a number of reforms. We asked Barbara and Wendy back on the show to talk about their findings and how officials have responded. And Barbara Laker, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having us.
And Wendy Ruderman, nice to have you back with us as well.
Thank you so much.
You know, taking all three of these investigations together, it really is a series of reports about Philadelphia's toxic legacy, the fact that this is an old industrial city with old housing stock, old school buildings. And is that how you see it, Barbara?
Yes, Philadelphia is an extremely old city. 70% of the homes in Philadelphia are built before the 1978 lead paint ban. We also had a number of lead smelters in the city that more than any other major city in America. And also we have schools that are very old, like 80% of them are also built before the lead paint ban. And so that's one reason we wanted to look at lead, asbestos, and certain environmental hazards that may still exist in the city.
Well, and certainly let's focus in on schools, your most recent investigation, Wendy, but at the same time, it's almost a year old. So things have happened since that time. What got you interested in looking at this problem in Philly schools, public schools?
Well, we had started looking at lead paint in homes, and then, as you mentioned, we moved to soil, and we were trying to look at where children in Philadelphia are exposed to environmental hazards that may hold them back and make life more difficult for them. And we knew that in Philadelphia schools, they had a very high asthma rate in Philadelphia.
About 25%, right?
Yeah, it's extremely high. A lot of children suffer from asthma, and it gets aggravated in the school system. So we knew that, and we wanted to see if we could get into the schools in some way that was tangible and get on the ground. And our goal was to get enough information to educate parents and then hopefully spur parents to action, because we really feel like the public school system is extremely important.
Sure.
Probably one of, if not the most important thing in the city of Philadelphia. And the success of the city depends on its schools and its children. And I think sometimes it's crazy to say that's lost on people.
Really, and nothing more basic than the air that you breathe, certainly when it comes to schools. And I wonder, Barbara, how you got into schools.
Well, we
and I put quotations in the air here.
Right. Obviously, we couldn't walk into schools and do any testing ourselves, and we had no access. So what Wendy and I did is we recruited teachers and staffers at 19 schools. We had like 24, 25 teachers and staffers that we found, which was extremely difficult because we had to, we're not education reporters. So we went to conferences, we reached out to them through social media, through word of mouth. And we told them what we wanted to look at and what we wanted them to do. And they risked their jobs doing what we asked them to do. So Wendy and I were trained at an accredited lab how to test for lead paint and do dust wipe samples for asbestos, and how to test for mold and how to collect water from water fountains. Once we got trained ourselves, we got the kits and we made the kits up. We wrote instructions. Mm. And once we found teachers willing to help us, we would meet them, say, at Dunkin' Donuts, Starbucks on a street corner, give them the sample kit and with the vials and instructions. And we went over not only just giving them the instructions, but we showed them how to test. And then they went on their way and went into the schools. They were very brave. They went in.
And this was secretly or without telling the officials?
Correct. Some of them did it before school started. We did have some teachers who were very open and told the principal what they were doing. But the majority of them took it upon themselves when they could to test around asbestos pipes and lead paint.
And how did they test, Wendy?
So we had ordered scientific equipment online. We got these things called ghost wipes, which are used by the EPA. They're kind of like moist towels that you would get when you go to Red Lobster or something like that. And they're moistened, and we would make these little kits, put vials in a baggie, put labels on them, give them even magic markers. And we would not only talk to teachers about what they wanted to test for, but also where to test. So we had maintenance logs that showed classrooms with the most chipping and peeling lead paint. And we also had reports about asbestos, damaged asbestos. And so
from pipes, things
from
like
pipes.
That.
So a lot of people didn't know this. I didn't know this. But asbestos was sort of phased out in the early 1980s. But any building built before then, asbestos is everywhere. It's in the woven into the tiles, in schools, in cafeteria floors, in gymnasium floors. It's in hallways. It's around pipe wrap. So they use it as insulation around heating pipes. They also use it as spray-on for either acoustical in music rooms or auditoriums, and they use it for fireproofing. So it is literally everywhere, and what happens is over time it begins to erode because of moisture intrusion. The asbestos gets exposed to all kinds of things, and it begins to fray. And when that happens, the fibers release, and what we found was the fibers in the millions were settling into dust on the floors in classrooms and gymnasiums and hallways, spaces where kids run and play and are bound to stir it up one way or another.
And I would think maybe even on desks as well. I mean, filtering down onto desks where children are reading and learning and writing.
We did find some on desks, not as much as we did on floors. And we also found lead paint residue on desks as well. So what we would sit down and talk to the teachers about is here's what's going on in your classroom from what we can tell from the records. And then they could also say, yeah, I also have this black gunk that I think is mold. And so we would talk to them about doing a tape pull where you take a piece of tape and you put it onto the mold and you tear it off, and then you got to put it on these slides. Labeling was very important. They had to label the time, the date, the place. To help with the verification process, we asked teachers and school staffers to take pictures of themselves doing the test. So we had an image of them doing the test and an image of where exactly they tested. And then once they did the test, so some teachers were more interested in lead, some were more interested in asbestos, some wanted to do all three, and some wanted to test the water fountains for us. And a lot of it was trial and error. So initially we ordered sterile water bottles to give to teachers to take samples out of water fountains. And the teachers told us that that was too conspicuous, that it was too hard to do that. So we talked to the lab and we talked to scientists, and they said it's fine if they just use a regular water bottle and fill it up like they're getting a drink. And then, they would give it to us and we would take it to the lab. So when we would find if we didn't think the teachers did the test properly, like we would have a debriefing with them either, as Barbara said. At the Dunkin' Donuts, right, where we asked them to go over how they did it. And if we felt like the test, they didn't follow the instructions, we would discard that before taking it to the lab. But what we took it to the lab in New Jersey. We just drove sample by sample by sample over to the lab.
And came back with the results that are certainly part of this particular series. And Barbara, one of the stories, it's really a really tragic little story about a little boy named Dean Pagan.
Right. It's a real tragic story what happened to Dean. Dean is a first grader in a classroom, and he was sitting at his desk, and unbeknownst to him or to a lot of people, there were lead paint chips on the ceiling that had deteriorated, were peeling and chipping, and they fell on little Dean's desk and on the floor around him. And Dean is a people pleaser, and so he didn't want to get in trouble with having a messy desk, and he also didn't want to get in trouble for getting up and putting the paint chips in the trash can. And so poor little Dean, he ate the lead paint chips on his desk to get rid of them. And the teacher did see him one day actually doing that and called the counselor. And the counselor called Dean's mom. And she had Dean tested for lead. And he had a like a mind-blowing 46 lead score, which is unbelievably high.
Something like 9 times the acceptable level?
Correct. And so he was hospitalized for 3 days and given chelation therapy to try to get rid of the lead in his body. But he had damage, and that has stayed with him. He used to be able to multiply 3 times 3 and do math. And he really wants to do well in school, and he couldn't recall how to do the math in his head. He would start sentences and then can't finish them. He was impulsive. He would bounce off the walls, and his parents have him in therapy to try to help him. But his mom told me he'll probably never be the same as he was before he was lead poisoned.
And we should say that he's no longer at this particular school. In fact, goes to school outside of Philadelphia. That, of course, is just the most egregious and tragic result of children, frankly, ingesting lead paint. Looking at these 19 schools, Barbara, I mean, were all of them at some level of distress when it came for children?
A lot of them were, but for different things. Like in some schools, like in Dean's school, it was mostly lead paint. The rest of the school was actually in pretty good condition other than lead paint. There were other schools like Olney that had really high asbestos scores. 8.7 million fibers were found in settled dust in a hallway outside a classroom. And so it depended on the school that we were looking at, but we did find alarming levels of asbestos in lead in a lot of the 19 schools.
Well, Wendy, we're almost having a break here, but I wonder, you looked at 19 schools. There are many more than 19 schools in Philadelphia. Can we extrapolate from your findings to other schools, especially older schools in the city?
Well, that was what was so scary about it was we, Dylan Purcell, who does a lot of the data reporting for the Philadelphia Inquirer and is really, is so smart, did a list of the most rundown schools based on maintenance, school maintenance logs and asbestos reports. And Barmer and I went to try to recruit teachers and staff in those particular schools, and we were also looking for schools with elementary school children, like kindergarten, pre-K. Those are the kids more putting things in their mouth, right, sitting on the floor for story time. So, but it does, to your point, make you think, well, this is only a small fraction of the schools, and all of them, mostly all of them, were built before 1978. I mean, some of them are more than 100 years old. So that's kind of what's scary about it. And Barmer and I were happy to see, you know, we didn't want to drive people out of the Philadelphia School District. You know, Dean's family, they were extreme case, and they left. But our idea was to try to motivate people.
Well, I do want to pick up on that after this very short break. That's Wendy Ruderman, Barbara Laker, our guests in this hour of Radio Times. And we're talking about their Toxic City series, looking at Philadelphia's schools and finding high levels of lead and asbestos and other toxins as well. Much after this very short break, we'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with Barbara Laker and Wendy Ruderman, award-winning investigative reporters for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, talking about their report out last year called Toxic City, Six Schools. It won a number of awards and was most recently a finalist for a Pulitzer Prize. You can join us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Wendy, let me pick up on this, but also to you, Barbara, as well. You also detailed the amount of cleanup that was going on in some of these schools, but part of the, I guess, toxic legacy of the cleanup was that that helped to create some of the problems in some of the schools of asbestos or even lead paint being brushed off of buildings, but then wafting inside of windows or wafting inside of the school. Can you speak to that, Wendy?
Right. So sometimes we found the school district, you know, with good intentions, would come in and do something to try to fix one thing and then make something else worse. One of the things that the school district grapples with is moisture getting into school buildings. So what they do is called brick pointing, where they will grind out the cement mortar in between the bricks, and then they will refill it to try to seal it up. And there has been lots of studies and new information about silica. Silica mm-hmm. is when you grind quartz or some sort of material down to a very fine powder and you breathe it in, you can do some real damage to your lungs because they're very sharp. But that's mostly for the workers. But,
sure.
But
and they probably wear masks, or hopefully they wear masks.
In this case, some of them were not wearing masks, which would be against OSHA regulations. So what would happen was we would find out that they were doing brick pointing work during school hours, and we would send our photographer, videographer, Jessica Griffin, over to the school, and she would literally film them spreading plumes of silica dust everywhere. Mm. And the problem was that it was getting into the schools during school hours. Not only was it very loud and very disruptive, but there was dust everywhere. I mean, it looked like piles of sand inside the schools, along the windowsills. And
while school was in session.
While school was in session. So these are the kind of things that aggravate asthma and are really nonsensical if you think about it. So a lot of work was being done during school hours that made things worse and sort of imperiled the health of kids.
Well, Barbara, was that just policy by the school district? The schools are open, and so we're going to be doing the work?
Well, they often contract out the work, and then sometimes the contractor even has a subcontractor. And so sometimes the school district may not be aware, if they're not on site, how the work is being done. So in another case we found where they were doing work on a roof at a school, and they had a generator running while school was in session, and the generator went into the intake vent of a classroom, and the children, carbon monoxide went into the classroom, and two children passed out, 26 children were taken to the hospital, because you can't obviously smell carbon monoxide, and the kids were getting all sleepy, and because the work wasn't being done correctly, and that should have never have happened.
In fact, one little boy, Lucas Sims, had carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yes, he did. He was the little child who actually passed out in the classroom, and they at first didn't know what was wrong with him, and teachers were shaking him and trying to awake him, and then they realized what was going on, and as a precaution, all the children in that classroom were taken to the hospital for a checkup.
We're going to be hearing from the school district in a couple of minutes, but let me turn back to you, Wendy Ruderman. What your report came out in almost a year ago, 2018. What has been the response of the school district?
I think the school district has really stepped up, and, with the school district, I don't think it was intentional. I think they thought that they had one of the best asbestos remediation programs in the country, and so that's the thing about looking at things that are invisible to the eye. How do you know something's there if you've been doing it this way since 1980s, when they began to remove asbestos from schools when it got damaged? But since then, in the wake of our series, they've dedicated more money towards removing lead paint in some 40 schools, which will increase and help kids. Something like 26,000 kids will be in a healthier environment once that work is done. They are also cleaned up 7 schools where we found the highest number of asbestos fibers. They worked with city council to pass a law, and this was really amazing too. Basically, you can't send a kid into a school or an area of school with chipping and peeling paint. So the school has to be lead safe before a kid can enter that area. And one thing that we found in reporting out this series over 3 years is that in Philadelphia, there was a law that landlords couldn't rent out a home to families with children under 6 if they had chipping and peeling lead paint. It had to be lead safe. But there was no comparable law in the cities, in the city schools. And that was really shocking to us, and I think that came as a surprise to the parents as well. They, like poor Dean Pagan's family, you send your kids to school and you expect them to be safe, and you don't expect them to be exposed to hazards that hinder their ability to learn. So that law was passed by City Council and signed by Mayor Kinney last year.
And making hopefully a difference. And I wonder, Barbara Laker, then, as you mentioned, interested in the response from the parents, obviously investigating something that they probably didn't know about their neighborhood school.
Yes, a lot of parents were very grateful and thankful. Dylan Purcell, the person who does all the data, and he and Garland Potts came up with a school checkup, which had all the information on every single school. And so parents could actually click on that school checkup and see the environmental health of the school they were sending their child to. And so that was very helpful to parents, and a lot of parents use that all the time to get a look into the school and to see how much lead paint and asbestos is in the school, because even if they walk in the school, they're not experts. They don't know what to look for. Sure. And it gave them kind of an assurance that that if their school was safe and they felt comfortable sending their child to that school.
Well, I wonder, too, about your own education. As you said, you're not science reporters and had to get a kind of a brush-up course on things like the effect of toxic material on child development, for instance.
Yeah, we had to do a lot of research. Wendy read an entire book about asbestos. And we talked to a number of experts who had also looked at asbestos in settled dust after 9/11 in apartments around the World Trade Center. And so we had to get educated to know. We didn't want to alarm people for no reason. Right. And we didn't want to say this is a dangerous situation when we didn't know. And so both of us had to talk to a number of experts, read reports, get scientists on the phone to explain it to us in layman's terms so we could explain it to the readers.
You want to add to that?
I was surprised as a parent how little I knew about lead and its impact on a child development. So we talked to a lot of pediatricians and a lot of doctors in the field, and what we learned was that no amount of exposure to lead is good for kids, and that your brain, when it's developing very, very quickly, is the way a doctor explained it to me, is that your brain is like a train moving to station as you develop. And what happens is the lead is like throwing sludge in front of that train. So the development skill that you're supposed to pick up at that time gets, you can't develop that skill or it's thwarted. So the train will go around that, but you can never go back to pick it up. So a lot of what a brain does, like for Dean Pagan, you have to learn workarounds. Your brain eventually can sort of adapt to some of the deficiencies, but all that stuff was really upsetting. And I had learned that there was lead paint in my house, which I hadn't realized before working on this. And yeah, it was really eye-opening. And now, you know, I walk around the city, I see lead paint everywhere. I see damaged asbestos everywhere. And once you see it, it's really hard to unsee it.
Absolutely. I mean, as you both mentioned, it's an old city with a lot of old infrastructure, and you're going to find something like that. Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Wendy Ruderman, who joins us along with Barbara Laker. They are award-winning investigative reporters for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News. And they took a deep dive into three, I guess, toxic legacies of Philadelphia, one having to do with lead and certainly lead in paint in houses, also looking at soil in some of the river wards here in the city as well, and their most recent investigation looking at some city schools, some 19 schools finding asbestos and lead and other toxins as well. And we should say that their journalism has won a number of awards and was a finalist most recently for a Pulitzer Prize, which is one of the reasons we wanted to have them back on Radio Times to talk about their findings and also to talk about some of the reforms in response in relation to some of their findings in their journalistic reports. And you can join us. Again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You wrote something in December 2018 about and perhaps it's even changed since then, that there have been a number of new laws as a result of some of the reporting, and I'm looking at you, Barbara Laker, 4 new protective laws, 770 landlord fines have been fined, I guess, or 770 landlords were fined, $15.7 million in emergency school repair funds, more than 700 visits by health inspectors at addresses in neighborhoods with high rates of childhood lead poisoning, and on from there. When you start a report like this or a series like this, is that what you want?
You want to see some reform or action, but there's no guarantee. So when you start out reporting a series like this, Wendy and I just lay out the problem and our findings, and then what will be, will be. And so with the lead in homes, we were relieved to see that actually the city started holding landlords more accountable and fining them, because when we did that series, they were not. They were taken to lead court if they didn't clean up the house and were given a warning and still didn't clean up the house for the tenant. But nothing, there was no really repercussion, and nothing really happened to them. And the city also sent inspectors around to more inspectors to look at the homes in the city. In the series we did on tainted soil in the river wards, the State Department of Environmental Protection actually came in and retested all the areas around the old Anzon factory that Wendy and I had tested the soil in. And then they held the landlord accountable and made them fix it up. And so soil that was exposed while we wrote the series is now no longer exposed. And there was, as Wendy said, a law that was changed as far as the schools, and the governor allotted $15.7 million for cleanup for the schools. And so we did see reforms as a result.
And I'm curious, the governor did, as you mentioned, earmark some money to clean up in the schools. And I know he wants more money from the state based on the severance tax. It's unclear whether he'll be able to get this through or not. But nonetheless, how much is money kind of at the root of what we're talking about?
I think it's really everything. I mean, it will take, you know, the school district says that they have billions in deferred maintenance. But the more immediate problems, I think the estimate is it would take like $250 million to just repair all the damaged asbestos and remove damaged asbestos floor tile and remove chipping and peeling paint. And environmental remediation is extremely expensive when done right. And so it also is very time consuming. So the school district has come up with an intense protocol to clean up lead in schools and make sure once the lead is cleaned up, it is no longer there. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, what we found was they thought they had cleaned up the lead, or that the company they hired had cleaned it up. But when we went and tested, the lead was still there. Wow. So they weren't doing it properly. So now there's lots of layers of oversight, but that takes a lot of time and a lot of money.
And a lot of personnel.
And a lot of personnel. Yeah, absolutely.
Let me get Pascal from, looks like, South Philadelphia to join our conversation. Pascal, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, thanks for taking my call this morning.
Sure.
In addition to the lead in the spaces, I wanted to touch base on the furniture. And if there's been any thought with regards to what furniture is made of and where all those materials come from and how that affects us as well.
Well, that's an interesting question, Pascal. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. Barbara Laker, have you looked at that, or did your teachers look at that?
We know that they looked at the desk for a different reason, because the school district also has a very large rodent problem with mice droppings, which are on the desk, which are on the floor. And so some of the teachers we had enlisted actually had to sweep the floor and sweep the desk to get the droppings off the desk before. They didn't mention that the desk had lead, as far as I know of. It was more on the walls and ceilings and woodwork and windowsills.
Well, I'm just thinking about rodent droppings in schools and teachers having to come in and essentially sort of clean up, I guess, what, from the night before?
Correct, yeah. So that was another, double standard we found where in the restaurants in Philadelphia, if there's feces or rats or anything unsanitary, the health department will come in and shut them down. But in schools, there could be rodent feces all over cafeterias and cockroaches all over cafeterias. And I know a lot of the food is not cooked on site, but there's still a lot of food there. And pests are definitely a leading cause of asthma. As far as the school desks, what the furniture is made out of, we didn't look at that. Right. We didn't really think about it, I have to be honest.
Pascal, thanks for calling into Radio Times. But are you saying that as it stands now, things like rodent droppings, which are have to be addressed in restaurants, not necessarily addressed in schools?
They do have inspectors go to the schools, but I think they do annual reports.
They go into the cafeterias, right. And so they look at the eating area of the school, and they make note of it and tell the school to do something about it. But like Wendy said, if you're a restaurant, if you have a restaurant and the same conditions exist, often the health department closes it immediately. And we didn't find any schools that were actually closed immediately because of that. I don't believe that the health department goes throughout the school, though, to look at rodent droppings, only in the eating areas of the schools.
I'm trying to imagine, though, closing a school. I mean, that's much more complicated than trying to close a restaurant, if you know what I mean.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
and I do want to point out that the construction was going on during school hours because, you know, where are you? It's so time consuming. And where are you going to put all the kids? If you are remediating a room, you have to think about where you're going to relocate those as kids, and it all takes away from learning time, and space is a big issue. Time is a big issue. So trying to clean up schools in the 3 months during the summer can also bring its own hazards if it's being done too quickly or too haphazardly. So,
well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. Again, that's Wendy Ruderman along with us, joining us, Barbara Laker, talking about their investigation into Philadelphia's toxic legacy, most recently looking at Philadelphia schools, and we'll be taking a very short break, and we'll hear from the school district after this short break, and do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, and I've been talking with Barbara Laker and Wendy Ruderman about their award-winning investigation into the health hazards in Philadelphia public schools, including dangerous levels of asbestos, lead, and mold, leaking pipes, leaking roofs, rodent infestations. It's been about a year since their series was published, and the district has taken steps to address the problem. Is it enough? Danielle Floyd joins us, and she is the Chief Operating Officer of the School District of Philadelphia. Danielle Floyd, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good
Thank
morning.
You for having me.
You're very welcome. And I should say Wendy Ruderman and Barbara Laker are staying with us as well for the rest of the hour. You've been listening in. I'm sure you're very well aware of this award-winning series. Do you take any issue with the findings?
What I would say is that as a district, we've been working on this issue for a number of years. So what I would say is that the series, I think, drew broader attention to our challenges that we have. We manage over 300 facilities, as you can imagine, with an average age of 70 years, that we're tackling a number of issues. But we've made significant investments over the last 4 to 5 years and continue to do so moving forward.
Some of the staff, teachers, did this without telling anybody. Are they in trouble?
They are not in trouble. You know what? We get information lots of different ways. We get them through our union partners. We get them through reporters. We get them through parents who contact us. So you know what? The way that I look at it, it's better that we know so that we can do something about it. And so I don't take issue with it.
Right.
Would I've preferred a different way? Absolutely. But I'd rather have the information so that we can take a decisive action to make sure that we're providing students and staff with healthy spaces to work and learn.
When you said I would have preferred it a different way, preferred that they do it sort of out in the open?
Sure. Well, we have many channels in which people can communicate, you know, issues, whether it's pest control or a request for pest control, whether it's a need for a repair. We have many ways in which members of the community and parents and staff can communicate those needs. But again, I'd rather have the information so that we can take a decisive action when we do know about it.
Now, they identified 19 schools, correct? And over, I guess, last summer, the district took a look at a number of schools. What did you find and what were you able to do?
So, you know, one of the big takeaways from the work here was addressing stabilizing lead paint in schools. I think it's actually, to be clear, we're not removing. We are stabilizing and mitigating the hazard for children. So we had assessed, we do six-month inspections of all of our school buildings because we're federally required to do that for asbestos. We actually go above that and screen for other things, mold, lead. And so we use that information to then create work orders and mm-hmm. to inform the type of repairs that we need to make. So as part of this work, there were actually 46 schools that we had identified that needed intense lead paint stabilization work, but also a number of schools that where the HVAC, heating, air ventilation, and air conditioning systems needed to be replaced. And so a number of the projects were in the budget, are in the budget to do. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, our summers have not been short of busy over the last number of years to get these problems addressed.
And you mentioned more than 40 schools. So this summer, are there more schools in line for this?
Well, we had 46 schools that have been initially identified sort of as those high priority sites. To date, we've finished 12 stabilization projects. We have 7 in progress now, and we're going to finish the remainder of the elementary schools this summer. So by the start of next year, all of the students, because we consider students age 6 or less to be the most susceptible to having health risk or developmental risk as a result of being exposed to peeling or flaking paint that's presumed to contain lead. And so by the start of our next school year, those schools with the highest at-risk population will have been addressed. We are also committing a significant amount of funds to put together an environmental response team so that when issues are reported and found to us, we have a group of individuals who can go out quickly to be able to address the problem. In some cases, it can't be addressed overnight. And so, you know, again, coordinating and working with schools on being able to contain areas, make it safe for students and staff, and be able to develop a long-term plan in terms of how to remediate and address.
Let me have you define stabilized lead paint, and then I'll go back to our two guests,
absolutely,
other guests here.
What we explain when we go out and meet with parents is many times when we go to many of those schools, some of them built 1920, 1930, the layer of paint that you see is not typically the one that's original to the building. And so schools do mural projects. Teachers may come in and paint their room. And so there's layers, potentially layers of paint that are on the surfaces. What we do is scrape. So anything more than what you can, if you can put your finger in sort of a hole, we scrape the paint, any loose or peeling or flaking paint chips. We wrap those up. We contain the room. It's completely put in plastic. So teachers or students cannot be in those spaces while we're doing the work. We have an environmental consultant on site. So we actually perform testing to be able to say that the room has been stabilized and that the amounts of lead residue are well below the EPA limits or any limits that the Philadelphia mm-hmm. Department of Health have put in place. We produce those test results. They're on our website. They're actually provided in hard copies in school. So we've made all this information available so that if you want to know what we did in room 201, you can go and find a detailed report that provides that information.
Let me turn to you, Wendy Laker. Does that meet some of the concerns that came up from your reporting?
Yes, I think it does. I mean, I think the school district can do so much with what they have. And so I think one of the important things is that there needs to be a political will. And so the city leaders and legislators have to make this a priority so that the school district has the money they need to fix the schools. And there shouldn't be such a disparity where if you look at a suburban district, you know, two parents say something's wrong and a whole school is rebuilt. And these conditions wouldn't be tolerated in certain wealthier areas. And so I think the political will is very important to support the school district in their effort to clean up the schools.
Any argument from you, Danielle
Floyd?
You
will not hear an argument from me. We were very fortunate, I think you mentioned it earlier, Marty, to get $7.6 million in state grant funds from Governor Wolf. I think there was a press conference at Taggart School, which was one of the schools we actually stabilized not too long ago, where he was pushing the Restore PA as a funding source that this school district could access. But no, you will not hear an argument from me or from advocates or community stakeholders that we work with that we will do what we can with the we do not control our own revenue sources. We are funded by the city and the state. I think it's important for and we are in the middle of budget season.
Yes, so you are.
That is our reality right now. And so we have been very diligent and I think one just drawing greater attention to the need, but also being able to demonstrate that when we have been provided the funding, that we have spent it responsibly, that we have put the oversight in place, and that we are communicating what it is that we're doing with those who are most impacted. So our budget hearing is on May 15th. Please come to City Council and advocate for the additional dedicated funding specific to building conditions is something that, you know, not the full pot, but we really are looking for, you know, when we want to address these issues, let's have dedicated funding to do it.
And Wendy, I'm just curious from your investigation, both your and Barbara's investigation, what did you come away with as the top priority that for the district? I mean, in terms of, this is expensive, it's complicated, it's environmental, it affects children's development. How did you prioritize what you think the district should do?
Well, I think that one of the things we tried to do with our series was, even though a lot of these hazards are invisible, like lead dust and asbestos fibers and even mold spores, we tried to demonstrate how they really do impact real people and real kids. And I think that connection brought some new urgency to the issue or some new added layers of attention, not only from the school district but from the community. And there's a Healthy Schools Coalition made up of school district people and parents and principals and teachers that are working, hopefully in conjunction with the school district, to stay on top of these things. But I was happy to hear Danielle Floyd just detailed the level of work that's going into lead paint stabilization prior to the series. And even, prior to the series, there was some problems where workers would come in and they weren't following checking all the boxes. And so they were leaving behind lead dust unintentionally. And so,
yeah, let me pick up on that, because one of the findings, or certainly some of the descriptions in Wendy and Barbara's reporting, is that some of the contractors weren't trained adequately, or there were subcontractors that were not trained adequately. There wasn't the kind of inspection or even oversight that was needed. Has the district addressed that?
We have, and we've done it in a number of ways. So just for context, we probably on average have about 50 to 60 different construction projects happening at one time. And so we have
beyond even what we're talking
beyond
about.
Beyond what we're talking about. We're investing hundreds of millions of dollars to upgrade and fix school facilities. I have a team of about 20 individuals who manage those construction projects. We have on-site project inspectors. What we have done in both in our conversations with Wendy and Barbara, when they would bring these sorts of things to our attention, was we have specifications very clearly about lead dust and wiping down things, wetting things, that not having those issues occur. So we've done a number of things. Number one, our building inspectors have gone through, have been recertified in OSHA safety, 30-hour OSHA safety training certification. We are hiring a construction safety inspector to be sort of an independent audit of the work that is going on out in schools. We are issuing notices of poor work performance and practice. We have told contractors that if you don't abide by what we put together and put in terms of our work performance standards, that you risk being thrown off the job. Or if you need to come back and remediate an issue, it's on your dime. We're not paying for, poor work that was done. And we also have increased the number of individuals that we have on site, and we go unannounced so that we can check to see what is going on. Again, you know, we've got about 50 or 60 projects that are happening at one time. I would say, you know, the type of issues that are being discussed or were discussed here, it's less than 10% of where we're having issues or where we've had issues. And again, I think that what we've done even on is to reiterate our expectations to make sure that they're in writing, to make sure that our protocols are being followed. And again, one of the biggest assets for us are actually people in the building. Wow. They will tell you. You know, there's work happening outside of my room. The window was left open, and now I have dust in my classroom.
And you want them to call the district and say,
we want them to do that. There's nothing to hide. You know, there is an expectation that when you're doing work that you know what the regulations are, what the requirements are, and we expect you to follow them, period.
Thoughts, Wendy?
Yes, I think the oversight will really help. I think transparency, too.
I meant Barbara.
That's okay. Will really help. And I think when you look at a school that's deteriorating, sometimes it has a domino effect. So say you have a leaky roof, and if you don't fix that roof in time, then the water gets through to the school, ruins the lead paint, damages the asbestos, you have mold from the moisture, and so it's like a spiraling effect. And so I think that the school district, you know, if possible, can look at the bigger projects, too, that would then prevent all the other problems from domino affecting down.
Right.
But I think the transparency and openness, like if the district wants to hear from teachers and staffers about what's going on and oversees the projects, I think that would really, really help.
Anything you want to add to that, Wendy?
No, I think that... I think that initially, I guess, working with the school district was a little bit adversarial, but eventually, I think...
As you look over at Daniel Floyd.
Yeah. So, for instance, in one of the schools, we had a teacher decided to wipe like a supply closet, and it came back very high for asbestos fibers and settled dust. And the school district went to that supply closet, and they didn't see any source of asbestos. There was no source material. And so they were like, this is basically can't be true, and it's bogus, and the test was bogus, and all this stuff. But to their credit, they went in and they wet wiped and they HEPA vacuumed and they cleaned that space out of taking precautionary measures. And then they did air testing, a more expensive, more sophisticated air testing, and they found that there was asbestos fibers in the air. So it's just that you never know. And I think this was a learning process for us and also for the school district.
Would you agree with that, Danielle?
Well, I would say that. I mean, our testing methods are different. You know, I don't think it matters. Again, sort of the means of testing, I think what we established up front are very different in terms of what we do and what was done as part of this series. Our focus is on when problems are identified, how are we making sure that we're taking decisive action to be able to address it? Again, we manage a large inventory of facilities, over 300. We're the second largest property owner in the city. That is not insignificant. And we've been very clear that we've got a deferred maintenance backlog that's valued at over $4 billion. And so it's no different than your home. You know, there are things that need to be replaced in certain points in time. And when you're able to do that and when you're able to make those investments, you're able to prevent these sorts of things from happening. But again, for us, what I think is important is that at the end of the day, we have made investments. We're continuing to make investments. I think we have partnered with our advocates to push not only for funding, but also working around legislation that we're going to need to abide by. But also moving forward, making sure that we're making the information available, which I think was a big request that came not just from the series, but a lot of times what we hear in school
parents
communities.
Parents want to
know. They just want to know. Sure. And like, where can they access information and how can we make it parent friendly and digestible? We're talking about highly scientific information. And so how do you make that in a way that our parents, our schools, our staff can understand it? We're putting a big push on training. We just trained all 300 of our building engineers yesterday around lead, dust, and debris. And so I'm very encouraged by the work that we're doing and what you will see from us moving forward.
Well, we're going to end on that note. My thanks to all three of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Danielle Floyd, Chief Operating Officer of the School District of Philadelphia, thank you for coming in. And Barbara Laker, Wendy Ruderman, thank you for coming in as well. And we were talking about their award-winning series, Toxic City, Sick Schools. And they are investigative reporters for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. And you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.